Voice of Literacy, where literacy researchers, teachers, principals, parents, and policymakers share and discuss how literacy research informs practice. Join the biweekly podcast and discussion forums. My name is Dr. Betsy Baker, Professor of Literacy Studies at the University of Missouri. This week, we hear from Dr. Michael Kiefer, Associate Professor of Literacy Education at New York University. He does research involving the role of attention in reading comprehension. Welcome, Dr. Kiefer.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We're glad to have you with us. First, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in attention and reading comprehension.
Sure. Well, I started my career as a middle school teacher, and I really struggled with why some of my students seemed to have such a difficult time with reading comprehension. Hmm. In particular, many of my students read accurately and fluently, but they struggled to make sense of what they were reading.
Oh, let's stop there. That's really interesting. So they were accurate and fluent, but still didn't really understand what was going on.
That's right.
Huh. Okay.
And so I became interested in attention because there's a fair amount of work now growing done by psychologists and cognitive scientists that describe different skills involved in how we regulate our attention, how we stay focused, and how we avoid distractions. But reading researchers and reading educators weren't necessarily paying attention to this research, so I decided to collaborate with some folks to find out how these skills relate to reading comprehension.
Okay.
But in particular, I collaborated with Daniel Berry, who's an assistant professor of educational psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, mm-hmm. and he's the sort of expert on attention and its development. And then also with Rose Vukovic, who is an associate professor of special education here at NYU, who studies students who struggle with both mathematics and reading.
Hmm.
I also should say I have sort of a personal interest because attention is an area in which I've struggled personally sometimes. Hmm. So it's something that I actually also come to from personal experience.
Now, in this article, you talk about executive functioning, and I think you focus on two areas of executive functioning, attention shifting and inhibitory control. Do I have that right?
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what those things mean?
Sure. So executive functioning is a big term that means that involves a number of different skills involved in how we regulate our attention, how we stay focused, and how we avoid distractions whenever we're doing something that's focused on a particular goal. And among a lot of different skills involved, the two we focused on, attention shifting and inhibitory control, are both likely to be quite important to reading comprehension. So attention shifting is the ability to change your focus from one rule to another or from one piece of information to another.
Hmm.
So when students are reading, for instance, they would do attention shifting when they switch their attention from paying attention to the information in the text to paying attention to their prior knowledge. Or maybe to switch their attention from focusing on the main idea of a story to focusing on a particular vocabulary item or a specific word meaning.
So when you said earlier that you had middle school students who could read fluently but didn't comprehend, would that be an example of therefore they didn't shift their attention to?
I think that's right. I think for some of the students, certainly not for everyone, but for some of the students, part of the difficulty might be dealing with all of the different kinds of ways they had to change their attention while reading.
Okay. And what's inhibitory control?
So inhibitory control is the ability to stop some automatic process or automatic response so you could do something else, something that's more appropriate. For instance, if you're paying attention to the most common meaning of a word, but actually you need to inhibit that and pay attention to a different meaning for a word when you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, how to pay attention to the appropriate inference for a particular story, but suppress inferences that might be inappropriate. So making the right connections, not making all of the possible connections that you make while reading.
Is inhibitory control a type of attention shifting?
Not exactly. They're very related skills, and there's certainly research that suggests some ways in which they're the same skill and some ways in which they're different skills, but they're usually considered somewhat different but overlapping.
Okay, so now that you've done this work on the role of attention in reading comprehension, what did you learn and what would you tell teachers?
Well, it's a pretty exploratory work, but what it suggests is that these two skills are quite important to reading comprehension and that for students who may be struggling with one or both of these skills, they may be more likely to struggle with reading comprehension.
Hmm.
So for teachers really need to think about how they can consider their students' skills in these areas when they're teaching reading. So this might mean assessing these skills, either formally or just informally in the classroom, to find out which students might be struggling with regulating their attention. It also means that we need to think about how we can structure our reading instruction in ways that help better sort of scaffold students' regulation of attention.
Can you give me any examples? What would I do as a teacher?
Sure. Good teachers actually do this all the time. They scaffold attention all the time. So, for instance, when they make very clear expectations for what students need to pay attention to, they're helping students regulate their attention.
Hmm.
If you can imagine a classroom, in middle school we'd often start each class with a do now, where students came into the classroom, they looked up at the board, they saw specific instructions, and they knew exactly what to do, right? So they stopped paying attention to what was the craziness that was going on in the hallway, they stopped paying attention to their crush at that moment, and they started paying attention to exactly one thing in instruction.
Well, we can hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a middle school teacher, I know that there's always a lot going on in students' lives. And so, but the ways we can, as a teacher in the classroom, we can sort of scaffold the different demands that are placed on students and the different kinds of things that are pulling their attention, the better I think we can really succeed in helping them develop the skills they need.
Yeah, so if they're going to be reading Little Red Riding Hood, I mean, they're not in middle school, but just as an example, you'd say, so to focus their attention, today we're reading, this sort of genre with this kind of, these kind of characters, this kind of vocabulary, are all those attention-shifting scaffolds or not?
I think that's right, and sort of scaffolds so that we're introducing information in a very thoughtful way, so that rather than throwing at students a sort of huge range of things, we're saying, okay, now that you're reading, this is what I want you to focus on. Now let's focus on this kind of strategy. Let's focus on this kind of approach or this kind of vocabulary item.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to think about how we can accommodate those students who are struggling with these skills while also making sure that instruction is sort of appropriate for all students. So you can think about how to make your instructions about what students are supposed to pay attention to during an activity very explicit. You can break down an activity into very clear steps and give students time to process those instructions and process what they're doing. The other thing you can do, of course, which I think reading teachers do a lot of already, but maybe not as purposefully, is teach students self-regulatory strategies, where as they're reading, they can regulate not just their thoughts, but what they're paying attention to. And they can be a little more, they can ultimately be independent in using these strategies as they're reading to to shift their attention between what they're supposed to be paying attention to.
What do you tell parents?
Well, I think parents also can be aware of the ways in which, particularly in early childhood, I think there's some work on the ways in which home environments can be supportive of regulating attention. So one of the findings is that parent-child relationships are quite important in developing all of these things. So a lot of what we know in terms of nurturing and supportive environments at home, avoiding a certain level of chaos and avoiding a certain level of kind of overstimulation can sometimes be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's we know less probably about what we can say immediately to parents based on this study.
What do you tell principals?
Well, I think principals, as they think about supporting teachers to improve their instruction, they can look at the ways in which teachers are managing their classrooms. So this starts with thinking about things like classroom management and just rules and procedures, but it also can extend to how is the instruction that principals see teachers doing, how is it supporting all students,
mm-hmm.
regardless of their range of abilities or their range of skills in these different areas.
Yeah, and we're in the era of Common Core, so what do we tell policymakers?
Well, I think there's less immediate implications for policymakers for this study. I mean, I know that some policymakers in some areas are starting to think beyond the discrete academic skills that we usually measure and start to think a little broader about students' development.
Yeah.
So I think this study does converge with that idea of thinking about how across the grade span, but particularly in early childhood and the elementary years, that classrooms can support students' healthy development in a variety of ways. So that means that, test scores in reading and math may not be the only indicator, but that there are other ways we can evaluate how classrooms are developing students' other kinds of skills, such as their ability to control their attention.
Yeah. Do you see that standardized tests and that those kind of measures are able to assess attention shifting and inhibitory control? Would state tests give us information on those things?
I think that would be very hard to do mm-hmm. in a state test kind of way. There has been a lot of work and research in developing measures of these skills, but it's been mostly done by psychologists in very small scale settings. So the measures we used were based on prior research, but were individually administered one-on-one with one researcher and one student. They weren't the kind of things that are easy to turn into a paper and pencil test that students take across the state. There's some work done. I understand there's some work being done on computer-based assessment, so the extent to which you could do some things with computer-based assessment, but like any kind of standardized test, I'd be real nervous about how these ideas get translated into that.
Yeah, so it's another example of how standardized tests may not be able to. So maybe the test score you're getting isn't really a child's ability to read, but their ability to pay attention and shift attention and check their inhibitory controls, right?
I think it has its limitations, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What research are you doing next? Where are you going next with this?
Well, one thing I'd say is this is a really exploratory kind of study, particularly for students beyond early childhood. There was some research on these skills as they relate to very early reading skills, but this was one of the first studies that looked at it in upper elementary school students. Hmm. One thing I'm interested in is looking ahead to middle school students and to follow students longitudinally to find out how these skills develop.
Yeah.
Another area I'm really interested in is studying these skills in bilingual students. Hmm. So there's some research that by developing two languages and being exposed to two languages, you actually have advantages in these skills. Hmm. So if you imagine someone who's learning two languages at the same time has to constantly shift their attention between one language to the other.
Right.
They also have to inhibit one language in order to use the other language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's good evidence that bilinguals who've had rich exposure to two languages actually have advantages in this area. So that's one area in which we can think about our students who are bilingual and English language learners as having actually some advantages that we might be able to leverage in instruction rather than just focusing on their weaknesses.
Dr. Michael Kiefer from New York University, we thank you for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
You can find Dr. Kiefer's research in Reading Research Quarterly, Volume 48, Issue 4. Stay current with literacy research. Go to iTunes, Facebook, or Twitter and search for Voice of Literacy. Or go directly to our website, www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Kiefer. This is the Voice of Literacy.